This is the Trinitonian Podcast.
This is
your source for a weekly roundup of campus news, events, insights, perspectives, and more.
This is the Trinitonian.
The Trinitonian.
The Trinitonian Podcast.
This is the Trinitonian Podcast.
This is the Trinitonian Podcast for the week of August 20th. I'm your host, Dominic Anthony. At the beginning of 2018, Aramark renewed its contract with Trinity University and is now bringing new dining options to Trinity students. More on that from contributor Kaylee King.
Following the renewal of Aramark's dining services contract in February, there will be a variety of changes and updates to dining services this semester, primarily the addition of new dining options. Brand new options provided by Aramark include a fully licensed Starbucks that will replace Eco Grounds in the library, a sandwich shack that will replace the CSI pod, a Chick-fil-A that will be added to the Revolve concept in the Commons, an on-the-fly mobile food truck, and the Tiger Press juice bar. Some of the dining changes will be expansions and updates on options that were already available, including a new system that will allow students to use their meal swipes at dining locations other than Maybe for a value of up to $6.50. According to Charles Robles, Aramark's food service director, the most exciting dining option is probably the meal swipe exchange. It will give students a more flexible meal experience. Other dining changes in Maybe include the addition of a teaching kitchen, an allergy-free station, a vegetarian and vegan station, and a coffee shop, the Daily Grind, featuring local roasters. Back to you, Dom.
And now we'll hear an opinion piece on co-ed Greek life from contributor Benjamin Gonzalez.
My column was about the concept of co-ed Greek life, or in other words, making all fraternities and sororities include all genders. This idea came about in response to the common problem of sexual assault and hazing within many fraternities. The idea is that when fraternities are bubbles of all-male membership, they can magnify toxic masculinity and enable reckless behavior. Therefore, if we make fraternities co-ed, the more diverse membership creates a more respectful environment. While on paper this sounds good, I argue that the costs outweigh the benefits in this case. First of all, there's no evidence to suggest that forcing fraternities to go co-ed has ever reduced the rate of sexual assault in the campuses where they've tried it. Second, if you force sororities to go co-ed as well, it can eliminate safe spaces where women can find support with more personal issues. Therefore, I don't believe that forcing co-ed Greek life actually provides many benefits. While I'm all for inclusion, there are plenty of other co-educational spaces on campus, such as our dorms, our classes, and even a few co-ed service fraternities. If a fraternity wants to go co-ed, go for it. But the university enforcing a policy on all of Greek life could do more harm than good. Back to you, Dom.
Over the summer, researchers on campus used theater to combat HIV stigma. More on that from contributor Rafaela Brenner.
Trinity University students and faculty worked with the members of the San Antonio community this summer to create a theater production entitled End Stigma and HIV AIDS, Forum Theater Project. Across multiple performances, the show aimed to combat intense stigma faced by those living with HIV, which often acts as an obstacle to treatment. The scenes performed by the actors were written to portray what the researchers had observed to be the most common situations in which those living with HIV encounter stigma, situations among family members, and situations while seeking treatment. After viewing scenes in which the performers depicted oppressive events in these common situations, it was up to members of the audience to intervene in the oppression. In observing the effect of the show on the audience, those involved confirmed that the performances fostered empathy and awareness of the experience of those living with HIV. For further information on HIV/AIDS education and testing, the San Antonio AIDS Foundation is an extensive resource which can be found at sanantonioaids.org. Back to you, Dom.
In other news, the incoming first-year class is the largest Trinity has ever seen. At the time of this podcast, 695 students. And in other news, the Student Programming Board has announced its Welcome Week artist, Kyle, the rapper from Ventura, California, known for his collaborations with Lil Yachty, G-Eazy, and Chance the Rapper. The concert will take place August 25th at 7 p.m. On this week's podcast exclusive segment, I sit down with Trinity Symphonic Orchestra conductor Dr. Joseph Kinnear to discuss the orchestra's upcoming season. How are you doing, Dr. Kinnear?
Great, Dominic. Thanks for having me.
Of course, I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the repertoire on the Trinity Symphony Orchestra's upcoming semester.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, we have a wonderful year-long set of concerts, but we're starting in the fall with, the big thing is Beethoven 5. We're putting on the fall program along with Arturo Marquez's Danza No. 2, which is a favorite, especially in the Southwest. and then Corelli Concerto Grosso for the strings. So shaping up to be a great program. Of course, we've got our Christmas concert. I think it's on November 30th this year. It's early, but it'll be a great program there too. That's, of course, for the whole community and some great pieces, you know, good old sleigh ride and a little bit of Grinch Stole Christmas. And yeah.
And right. And the, if I'm not mistaken, for the Christmas concert, it's a, there's a combination, a group effort between the ensembles. Can you tell me about that and how that works?
Absolutely. So it's a department-wide effort, and it's always a really special program. We've got the wind ensemble and orchestra and the choirs and the handbells, and we often do some collaborative pieces and then also our own ensemble pieces. And it's a really wonderful event for the whole Trinity community. Usually about 3,000 people show up in person. And then, of course, we have live streaming of it, too, now. So it's a great event, chance for the parents to kind of see what the department's about, what we offer. And, yeah, it's a special time.
Cool. And a lot of the members, the student musicians in these various ensembles throughout the music department are not actual students in the music department. Can you talk about what it's like to teach at a university where a lot of the students that comprise the orchestra are not primarily musicians whenever it comes to academics and like often are majoring in something completely different than music?
It's a great environment because, I mean, my undergrad was at Oberlin College, which had a very strong liberal arts component as well, had the conservatory, music conservatory, but in many respects, Trinity reminds me of that kind of academic environment with a lot of really intelligent, very thoughtful, sophisticatedly thinking people. So when you get into an ensemble situation, you have students who really have a wide background intellectually and culturally, and many have traveled, had that chance, or to experience a lot of the things we're doing. And so if you're able to give certain references or to give some historical background, other things, students will pick it up immediately. In fact, they'll probably finish your sentences in a nice way about, you know, the Greek mythology behind this piece or what drove, you know, Respighi to write The Pines of Rome and the different scenes in Rome. And so I think the concerts are a great, and the preparation for them is special here because a lot of these students, although they're not music majors, like you said, a vast majority played throughout high school. Many are strong players. We have pretty much any major you can think of that's represented, from biology and sciences, everything to history and to literature to language and, you know, you name it. So that's a kind of special thing. You get a melting pot of a lot of different ideas. And I've been impressed with not only the level of academic achievement and everything, but the ability to take on new challenges pretty quickly and easily. And it's such a great group to work with.
Right. And this group, last year you took on Pines of Rome, a very difficult piece. This year you're taking on, if I'm not mistaken, Pictures at an Exhibition.
Well, sure. So it was originally written for piano by Mussorgsky, and he set out to set a tableau for each painting that he encountered in an exhibition that he went to. Of course, there's this famous walking music in between by the trumpets generally, but da-dee-da-da-da-dee-da-dee-da, that bookcases each little scene and their folk influences, many other things. And of course, Ravel, I think really gave this piece a boost with his orchestration of it, which is just amazing. The colors and the writing for each instrument is so perfectly put together that, you know, it's been a standard of the repertoire ever since. It's accessible enough for many orchestras to be able to play it, and not all Russian music is that way. You think of Tchaikovsky, you think of even Eastern European composers, Dvorak, others who, you know, not always the simplest, and of course this piece will be probably our biggest challenge thus far, but I think the orchestra will be ready for it by that time, and I think it's a mountain to climb that they're ready for. So it's a beautiful piece. The orchestration is terrific, and look forward to putting on that next step.
Cool. And speaking about some other things that are on the program this season, you have a couple of guest conductors coming in. Can you tell me about some of the guests that you're bringing in this year?
Absolutely. I'm so excited about our guests this year. First off, my good friend Farhad Hudiyev, who is right now the assistant conductor of the London Philharmonic.
Wow.
Incredible musician, went to undergrad with him. He was a violinist and composer at the time, and then went on to graduate school at Yale for conducting. He's just a wonderful human being, a very thoughtful and deep, passionate musician. He often told me, you know, play this like it's the last time you'll have a chance to. So there's that level of intensity and passion, and he's done so well. He placed in the Schulte competition, international conducting competition. So he's coming in October to work with us on the Beethoven. And so it'll be a couple of weeks before our concert, which is just perfect because I think his ideas and his passion and his energy will really help the students get to a new level before the concert. So he'll be coming in to do a workshop. I also have my good friend Eric Rohde, who's coming from Indiana State, who's coming in early February, to kind of work on some preliminary rehearsals on the Mussorgsky. And also, to tie in with the rest of that program in the spring, we have amazing Jinju Cho, violinist, who won the Indianapolis International Competition 4 years ago, is coming to play the Dvorak Concerto with us, which is... I'm so pleased to have her here. I met her in Erie when I was teaching there at Mercyhurst University and have been trying to find a way to bring her to Trinity ever since. And so through the Steer and Guest Artist series, we'll have her here to do master classes, to do the concert with us, of course, and to coach our string quartets, chamber music. And so it's going to be really exciting.
Well, those are all the questions I had. Is there anything you're excited for this year that I might have missed?
Well, we, for the first time since I've been here, we'll also have a retreat this fall, which is wonderful. You know, one of the things that's very important to any ensemble is group chemistry and bonding. Mm-hmm. And not only that is that important for any ensemble, but particularly college ensembles, because that glue, that connecting glue, makes the difference between a good orchestra or choir, wind ensemble, collegiate choir, and a great one. And the commitment level has been rising, and there's a lot of excitement, I think, in the ensemble and the department. And so this is a way to continue to connect. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's Saturday, September 8th. And so we'll have an on-campus, do a lot of different activities, go out and kind of introduce our first years too.
And for students maybe who don't know about auditions, who might be hearing about this for the first time, can you tell me more about auditions for the orchestra?
Sure. So next weekend, actually, are the auditions. It's 25th and 26th, is that right? Yes,
yeah,
Saturday
so.
And Sunday in the afternoon. And there's still openings. You can still sign up. I hear all of the string auditions, and then my colleague, Dr. Warman, and I hear all the wind auditions, too. And I sit in on those, and we base all our placements on what people are interested in doing and participating in and what the needs are. And but the wind ensemble and brass and percussion are on Thursday and Friday, 23rd, 24th. So, yeah, it's all coming to a head. And then, of course, Wednesday is the start of classes. And so everything is gearing up for a great, great semester and great year.
Awesome. Thanks so much for chatting.
Thanks so much, Dominic, for having me.
That's it for this week's edition of the Trinitonian Podcast. My name is Dominic Anthony, and I'll be back next week. Our intro music was written by San Antonio-based indie duo Vana, and this week's outro music is from San Antonio-based band Booty Feet.